CliffCentral.com.
There we go. Some extra nostalgia preparing you for a day with Dorian Paolo later. Some 80s music. All right. We've got a lot to get through today. We've got some things to talk about. There's some news on the agenda, and you can obviously get hold of us anytime you want to on 079-748. I always have to remind myself, 2090. You think it's funny that I can never remember that number?
You had a little bit of a blackout there for a moment.
See, I'm so used to like giving out either people's numbers here at the office or my number, or, you know, this one is I read it every day, but it just hasn't internalized. It's ridiculous.
I've told you before, though, I'm filling out forms a couple of times, and I have to fill in my number, and I go 079-748.
Oh, my God.
090. Then I have to scratch it again. Stupid. Yeah.
All right. Sean says, I love that song. The movie traumatized me as a child, though. Atreyu's horse dying destroyed my childhood. Yeah. I remember it. It wasn't one of my favorite movies, but there it is. Okay. Let's get into some stuff from today. Let's get into a couple of the stories for the weekend and get people ready. If you're looking forward to hearing from Leanne Moll, I'm afraid you're going to be disappointed this morning. She had a very big client lunch. I'm using her words to this. Client lunch is what she called it yesterday. It must have turned into a hell of a party because she couldn't even make the show today.
And she said she had 3 hours of sleep.
Yes. We do have Cindy Alter popping in just now, which is going to be terrific. We catch up with her. She's got a new song out, and we haven't spoken to her in some time. Plus, George is going to be on with us, isn't he?
Yes. George, he's back from Las Vegas.
Absolutely. So we'll find out how that went. Okay. What do you want to start with?
Let's start off with the hotel chain MGM Hotels. They are massive globally. I mean, one of the biggest hotel chains in the world. Well, they have now had a data breach here. Some people hacked into their systems. And on
Probably
Wednesday...
Probably George. Was an MGM Grand in Vegas?
Yeah, it was spectacular.
I know a lot of things about George Meany, but being a hacker on the side, I don't know that. I can't speak on that.
It's good business.
On Wednesday, it was released that more than 10.6 million MGM Resort guests' information were leaked. And given that MGM hotels are so successful, we have the likes of many celebrities, high-profile reporters, government officials, tech CEOs, and as well employees of the hotel chain whose information has been leaked. So right now, the hotel is scrambling to make sure that all of their high-profile guests don't have their contact details so readily available. But I mean, if you want, you know, for example, Justin Bieber's contact details, if you want Jack Dorsey's contact details, a co-founder of Twitter, this is probably your time to now find it. It was all actually came to light by a company called Under the Breach, and they're always forever scanning the interwebs to find out if there's any leaked information to verify what's happening. And they're the ones who first picked up that full names, home addresses, phone numbers, emails and birthdays of more than the 10.6 million people who have previously stayed at the MGM hotels have been leaked in files. So right now, yeah, to say the hotel chain is underwater.
I'm always interested in celebrities who use different names when they check into hotels because they want people phoning up and going, hi, could I please speak to Madonna who's staying at your hotel tonight? Because then their phone would ring off the hook the whole time. Mm-hmm. So they use fake names when they check into hotels. So Beyonce uses the name Ingrid Jackson. Oh. So now we know that. She can't use that one anymore.
Sorry, Miss Jackson.
When she goes undercover, Mrs. Carter, which is her real surname, she knows how to pick a name. So she goes Ingrid Jackson. Kim Kardashian doesn't seem to choose the most discreet names, which of course is very fitting. She sometimes goes by the name of her favorite character, Princess Jasmine, to avoid detection.
Come on now.
Idiot.
Yes.
Ice Cube, when checking into hotel, uses his real name, O'Shea Jackson, because nobody knows that's his real name.
Yeah, you don't really think of Ice Cube like
Sometimes
that.
Uses Darius Stone, which is his character's name in the XXX movies. Tom Hanks alternated between Harry Lauder, who was a vaudeville performer and comedian, and Johnny Madrid, who's a trumpet player who performed with Blood, Sweat, and Tears and The Outsiders. See, they put in some thought. All of them except Kim Kardashian, by the looks of things. Taye Diggs,
Uh-huh.
He follows in the tradition of actors who change their names for the big screen, which is convenient when traveling. He could use his actual name, Scott, to avoid detection.
Yeah, a black Scott. No one thinks
a black man called Scott.
I didn't know Taye Diggs wasn't his real name.
No. Lindsay Lohan's alter ego, Bella Lovelace, is an ode to Linda Lovelace, the 70s porn star who Lohan almost played in a biopic.
But she played a porn star in real life as well.
Yes, well,
she's loose with it.
Yeah, and Lindsay Lohan, listen, she probably gives her real name at the counter because she actually does want people phoning her, and then she'll invite them up for drinks.
Yeah.
Jay-Z is one of the few stars who has chosen an alias arguably more famous than his own when checking into hotels. Sean Carter goes by Frank Sinatra.
Huh. Well, I doubt anyone is also calling to find out where Frank Sinatra is staying because he's 6 feet under.
Yeah.
But there's Frank Sinatra Jr. That'll be awkward if they're at the same hotel.
Yes, they would have to. That would be a problem. Oh. Brad Pitt, when traveling with a significant other, has a tendency to make his own couple's names. When he was half of Brangelina, mm-hmm. Pitt used to check into hotels as Bryce Pilaf.
Yeah, you would not expect that.
Bryce Pilaf, but he's kept the BP for Brad Pitt. Angelina Jolie checks into hotels with the mysteriously absurd alias Miss Lollipop.
No, that's really silly.
That's as stupid as Princess Jasmine. Michael Jackson, when he used to leave the Neverland Ranch and check into a hotel, would use the name Dr. Doolittle.
Oh, my God.
You know, the more I find out about Michael Jackson now that he's dead, the more I'm creeped out by the guy.
Hi, I'm Dr. Doolittle.
Oh, no.
Speaking to animals.
Come up to my suite.
I'm giving it another like 2 to 3 years up until his kids really speak about what it was like to have him as a father.
Yeah, Johnny Depp. Mm. He doesn't break the tendency when coming up with aliases. Some of his hotel names include Mr. Drip Noodle, Mr. Odd Pong, and Mr. Stench.
Oh, come on now.
Apparently, no matter what his identity, he is not a fan of first names. Kirsten Stewart, do you remember her?
From Twilight.
That's right. And what has she done since then?
Oh, she just starred in the Charlie's Angel remake, which did not do well.
No, it flopped completely. She goes by the name Chuck Steak. For those unfamiliar with butcher terminology, it's the name of a type of beef that comes from a cow's shoulder.
Uh-oh.
Chuck Steak. Jessica Alba. I'd go through all the names to end up in her hotel room by mistake.
You can't say that.
She goes by Cash Money.
That's so creepy.
I know. She goes by Cash Money, which may seem a bit brash, but it's actually a homage to her husband, Cash Warren.
Oh.
Justin Timberlake goes for Mr. Wood Pond. Get it? Timberlake Wood Pond.
Very good.
Justin Bieber.
That actually could sound like a Vietnamese name.
He goes by Chandler Bing.
Sorry.
Which is the name of Matthew Perry's character from Friends. It's unclear if Matthew Perry returns the favor by checking into hotels as Justin Bieber, but we know that for sure. Stacey Ferguson, who's also known as Fergie from mm-hmm. the Black Eyed Peas, she could have gone the predictable route and checked into hotels with her real name. But instead, she decided to have some fun. She goes by Penny Lane, which is either inspired by the Beatles song or Almost Famous. Slash goes with Saul Hudson. That's his real name. But apparently, that's not good enough. So he sometimes goes with IP Freely.
But here's the thing with all of these aliases. It's all good and well, but looking at a leak like this that's happened with MGM, criminals and hackers are way smarter than we think. And whether you use an alias or not.
No, sure.
If this information is out there, they probably aren't just looking at who
booked
a standard room.
See, can't you just have fun with us instead of being serious on a Friday? Why do you have to make it all about serious, like data leaks? Who gives a fuck?
No, but I'm thinking, these people are probably looking at who booked out the penthouse suite for a month, and then they follow the paper and the money from there. That's a little worrying, to say the least. Here's someone else though who, okay, don't we hate complainers?
Yes, definitely.
And people who
we hate them because we're complainers.
No, but people who also bitch and moan just to get free stuff.
Sure.
Listen to this story. A man in Utah has now been arrested for releasing mice and hamsters in various hotel rooms just to complain to management in order to get a free stay.
Yeah, you see this kind of guy, he should be arrested. Good.
I'm caught in between thinking really smart, but then also stupid. He's 37 years old. His name is Ryan State, and he's accused of using this whole rodent plan to scam at least 3 different hotels, and he'd stay in them over different times. One of the... excuse me.
Are you having a problem?
Did you go to Leanne's lunch yesterday? No.
One of the hotel's general managers told the press that Ryan would be compensated with at least 2 nights every time he would complain. They just thought, oh man, sure, just it's what an unfortunate incident that every time he stays at this hotel, there's always some sort of rodent that's running around. But they didn't really pick up that why is he the only one that's complaining? So eventually, after a couple of complaints that Ryan had, they decided to bring some authorities involved to investigate where these rodents could come from. And then came out that Ryan was the one who would pitch up to these hotels with these rodents. I mean,
first of all, who'd want to stay in Utah if you've been there? Oh my goodness.
Salt Lake City. Now put that on the list.
Is that something else that you hate? Utah?
Have you been there? It's Mormons and mountains.
Well, in conclusion, he's charged with 2 counts of theft by deception and 3 counts of criminal mischief. And once again, just imagine this guy having to sit in a jail cell around a rapist and a murderer. And it's like, what are you in here for? Well, I just lied to get a free night at a hotel.
Took my hamster to a hotel.
What a dodo. What an honest to goodness dodo.
So is he going to jail now?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
This is like a legitimate thing because as it came out in the investigation, when you let out mice, this is your establishment, and then these mice or these hamsters would go around, they'd bite into walls, they'd ruin sheets or whatnot, they'd leave feces around. That's like ruining your property. I think it's a legitimate reason for him to go into. I'm trying to be lehedi with my language.
Rat feces.
All right. Do you know what Elton John's nickname is when he checks into hotels? I'm not making this up at all.
Rocket Man.
No. Sir Humphrey Handbag. Or Binky Poodle Clip. I reckon he's definitely like the gayest gay guy ever in the history of humanity.
The only gay in the village.
Elton John is like the queen of all gays.
You know, when we try to say stereotypes aren't a thing.
He's a walking, singing, talking, dancing, piano playing stereotype.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Really, what a fabulous guy. I mean, Binky Poodle Clip. Hello, I'd just like to check in as Binky Poodle Clip.
Because that, of course, is not going to raise suspicions when a Binky comes in.
I do have one horrible story for the morning, but it's worth reflecting on because we're always, we're blown away by how gruesome and horrible people can be.
Oh, no.
This is a story from Limpopo. A father allegedly killed his 4 children because he thought his wife was cheating on him. Police turned away the mother when she went to report that he had taken the children without her consent on Saturday, 4 days before they were found dead. Now, this is scary for a number of reasons. There's this lunatic maniac running around, and he killed his own four children, all right? Now, you have to be you have to be an off-planet kind of lunatic to be sick enough in the head to murder your own children. But wait, it gets worse. This poor woman tries to go and report it. The police turn her away, right?
Oh, no.
They find the kids. Katlego, who's 9, Joyce, 7, Tsepo, 5, and Nadel, 3. They're found dead in 2 separate locations in Khapasha, which is the Selatole village outside Burgers Fort in Limpopo on Tuesday. The bodies of the 3 children. Now, I'm sorry to have to tell you this story, but it's in the news and you might as well know about it. It's from Sowetan Live. The bodies of these 3 children had 5-inch nails in their heads. The guy had hammered a nail into their head to kill them. And the youngest one was bludgeoned to death with a big stone. Now, the father arrived at the house where the mother was staying with the grandmother, armed with a panga and a knife. The children and their mother had moved out of the house they shared with the man a week earlier. He came into the yard and asked for the children. She did not respond because he's a violent person. He just took the children and left. Police said the kids are taken away from their scholar transporter Monday afternoon. Spokesperson Brigadier Mutlafela Mojapelo said that the driver had known the father had stopped the car and let them go with him. He is 47, this father, said that while they were searching, sorry, the relative of the father, 47, said that while they were searching for the man and the children and couldn't find him, he received an SMS from the father. He sent me a text message to inform me about the deaths of his children and the location of their bodies. When I followed up, I was shocked to find three kids placed at one spot in a trench not far from their house. Isn't that just horrible? In every way horrible. I don't like doing stories like this on a Friday, but you can't ignore this stuff. You can't pretend it doesn't happen, and you can't pretend we don't live in a society where there are some truly, truly dangerous people.
Wow, that's bad.
Hmm?
It's bad when adult people die, but it's always worse when children are dying.
What a story.
We have to be outraged when our kids are being killed.
Do you want to hear some... I know it's no politics Friday, but do you want to hear the highlights from the Nevada Democratic debate that we spoke about yesterday?
Please here, bring us up from that story.
All right, here are a few stories.
Cup 2 weeks from today, the day after Super Tuesday, and the only candidates left standing...
This is Mayor Pete,
Bernie
by
Sanders
the way.
...and Mike Bloomberg, the two most polarizing figures on this stage. ...thing about the politics of the country to ourselves.
Are you trying to say that I'm dumb, or are you mocking me here, Pete?
Companies. The only company we can't go after are gun manufacturers.
Thank you,
because
Vice
my
President.
Buddy here, but that's
we're
a different
gonna, we're gonna stay.
They all had such a go at each other, so they're in that clip, we've had Pete Buttigieg, we've had Amy Klobuchar, and then Joe Biden at the end. But wait, it gets really nasty once Michael Bloomberg becomes the target of Elizabeth Warren. And Bernie Sanders has a horrible night, too. They all did exactly what I said 2 weeks ago. They stood in a circular firing squad and had a go at each other. Listen to this.
And it's not whether he apologized or not, it's the policy. The policy was abhorrent, and it was, in fact, a violation of every right people have.
I've sat, I've apologized, I've asked for forgiveness, but the bottom line is that we stopped too many people, but the policy, we stopped too many people, and we've got to make sure that we do something about criminal justice in this country.
You know what, Mr. Bloomberg, wasn't you who made all that money. Maybe your workers played some role in that as well.
I think we need something different than Donald Trump. I don't think you look at Donald Trump and say we need someone richer in the White House.
All of those women from those non-disclosure agreements, so we can hear their side of the story.
Jesus, poor Michael Bloomberg. Now, you know, I don't feel sorry for him because he's got $60 billion, but I feel sorry for him because he thought he could buy his way into this election and then just stand up there and have a good time. These people savaged them. They are politicians. These are career politicians. They have no scruples. They are soulless, monster, night-crawling swamp trolls who have lived their entire lives in Washington eviscerating each other for pleasure and for political gain. These are sick individuals. Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, these are people who've never had real work. Elizabeth Warren was in academia before she went into politics. Bernie has been on the dole since he was 14, and he's 100 now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Pete Buttigieg, his father was some kind of Marxist academic as well. He was mayor of a town with about 50 people in it. Amy Klobuchar, I mean, poor woman. She's something of a substantial person, but she's still a politician. And poor old Mike Bloomberg, he reckons that, oh, well, the rules of corporate America apply here. I've got $60 billion. I'm not afraid of these people. He pitches up and they pull his organs from his body before he even knows what's going on.
Yo.
Here's Elizabeth Warren. I just want to go back to this because she's hardcore about this, right? This is her moment to strike and she doesn't waste it. You see her Pocahontas come out. She basically, what did the Native Americans do when they'd scalp a person,
yeah.
Right? This is what she's doing to Mike Bloomberg.
You mean her 1/17th come out?
Not 17th, 1/2550th, I think it is, that she's Native American. But she claimed it.
Gotcha.
So here's Elizabeth Warren. Listen to this. She's going on about these non-disclosure agreements, which Mike Bloomberg made some women sign. And he said some pretty horrible things about these women. And Elizabeth Warren doesn't waste a second to tear him apart.
In the White House.
All of those women from those non-disclosure agreements, so we can hear their side of the story.
We have a very few non-disclosure agreements.
How many is
that? Let me
there?
Finish.
And yet today, despite spending twice as much per capita, Chuck, twice as much as any other major country on earth,
I'm the only one on this stage that's actually got anything done on health care.
My plan is a public option. And according to all the studies out there, it would reduce premiums for 12 million people immediately. It would expand coverage for about that same number.
There's a powerful American majority ready to undertake the biggest, most progressive reform we've had in health care in 50 years, just so long as we don't force it on anybody.
We need as much help for as many people as quickly as possible and bring in as many supporters as we can. And if we don't get it all the first time, take the win and come back into the fight to ask for more.
Now, I've got a plan to get us carbon neutral by 2050. And I think everybody up here has a plan that more or less does the same. So the real question is, how are we going to actually get it done?
We are going to increase by tenfold our investment in science.
So this is just the highlights reel. I just thought you needed to know. But listen to what Elizabeth Warren called Michael Bloomberg. She didn't mince her words. She basically called him an arrogant billionaire. Listen to this. Unbelievable. Yeah. Okay, let me just try and get
this. I want to respond to what else he said.
I don't think there's any chance of the senator beating President Trump. You don't start out by saying, I've got 160 million people. I'm going to take away the insurance plan that they love. That's just not a ways that you go and start building the coalition that the Sanders camp thinks that they can do. I don't think there's any chance whatsoever. And if he goes and is the candidate, we will have Donald Trump for another 4 years.
I'm trying to find this. I can't find the right thing. But the reason I bring this up today is because I watched that movie Bombshell the other day. And there are obviously all these allegations against people in politics, and Harvey Weinstein was in the news this week. And here you've got Michael Bloomberg, who made these women sign these NDAs. Now, whether or not there was any inappropriate sexual goings on, we don't know because of the NDAs. They can't talk. If they talk, then terrible things happen. They've obviously given a large amount of money to shut up. That's what they signed the NDA for. So it's just amazing to me how this has become the Achilles heel for so many people in not just politics, but in corporations, that you could be taken down no matter how powerful you are. Here's this guy, $60 billion. He's built one of the most successful media empires in the world, Bloomberg. And now he wants to enter this race. You have to have something wrong with you to subject yourself to this, to have these amateurs on a stage. They're professional politicians, but they're amateur people. You know, they're not good at being people. And this guy is allowing this to happen to him. And it's going to get worse for him too, by the way. It's not going to get any easier. So I have to ask, if you've got any dark stuff in your past, why would you go into politics? Even if it's, you know, you called, and this is the clip I was looking for, is where Elizabeth Warren says to him, you called women horse faces and fat broads. That's what he called them.
Oy.
And this is what they're using to bludgeon him to death on stage with. If you have any dark past, or you have paid someone off, or you've got some kind of sexual indiscretion in your background, why would you go into politics? The guy can have, he's an old man already, right? Mike Bloomberg is in his 70s. He can have a great life. Spend the next maybe 20 years, if he lives longer, 30 years even, in reasonable health, enjoying himself, going to tropical islands, holidaying, visiting places he's wanted to visit, spending time with his family. He could have anything he wants with his money.
There's something way bigger, obviously.
What do you want to be president for?
Well, what it tells you, Gareth, money's not enough.
Mm-mm.
Money's not enough. It doesn't fulfill the human condition.
And to me, I remember just this great, great article that I read in Rolling Stone magazine about Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
And it was around how he was chasing the phenomenon of Thriller. and how he led his career never being satisfied after peaking with Thriller, you know, the greatest selling single or album of all time, and how he was always looking for that next.
it's a drug.
Think about it in a case of Bloomberg or anybody else, really.
How do you top success? You need more success.
But I think success and power and accolades is what drives him as opposed to money. Like, I mean, we can in 2.3 seconds envision ourselves on a yacht until our last day. but clearly not.
Yeah, but there's also something else to the human condition, because we're only talking about extrinsic things now. But it's not enough. You need human connection. You need all these things that sound hippie, but you need them.
Before we get to Cindy Alto, who I'm really excited to see again, here's some comments. Just one quickly from Elson, who says, speaking of horrible politicians, I'd like to wish my leader, who is dead, Robert Mugabe, a happy birthday.
A happy death day.
Kushongo. All right, so there we go, Elson. We're wishing your leader, Robert Mugabe, happy birthday.
Robert.
Yeah, happy birthday, Robert.
Tell Elizabeth she can keep her Britain. I will keep my Zimbabwe.
Exactly. Pichlang says, Gareth, your pronunciation of vernacular names is good. You should go and be Jane Dutton's co-host on ENCA, and your role will be simply to step in the middle of her sentences when there is a word or name in vernac.
Oh, she,
imagine that. Does she butcher them?
She's shocking.
I didn't know that.
And she's been shocking forever, so I haven't watched
but
her
But I used
years.
To keep a list of really hard, difficult black names that I would make white people say on my show just for fun, for shits and giggles. And I love doing this.
Now I want to watch Jane Dutton.
Yeah, I'm going to give her this list, and I'm going to make her... In fact, get her in
Should
studio.
We get her?
Yeah, and we get her to say names like...
That'll be a great email. Hey, Jane, we'd like
Zwakazi
you...
and Olile and Nomakabiso and Olelwa and Nontedo and Nomakete and Raitloana and Nkopotseng. Oh, there's some good ones. Nemadzivanani. That's a nice Limpopo one.
Oh, I love it when you talk foreign. I don't know what.
Bambozingo Mongo.
Wow.
What language is that even?
Angas, but it's there. Angolo.
It's provocative.
Kihoshe. Kihoshe. Yo. Don't know where some of these. I don't even know which language some of these are in.
That's most of them sound closer.
Nompumezo. That's not so bad.
Yeah.
Nokwint. Tiopo.
Yeah, put an HLE there, put an X in there, put a TJO.
Yes, poor Jane Dutton. Get her
Stir
in there.
The
let's,
pot.
Let's get her in and give her a lesson.
Let me email her like that.
Dear Jane Dutton, we're going to bring you onto the show so we can humiliate you and make you say things that sound stupid. Don't do that.
I don't want to feel like we're taking a dig at her, but I saw...
No, well, let's talk to her anyway. We'll just throw this in at the end.
You know, but I saw very renowned media professional the other day post on social media saying, did anyone out of the whole entire crew who works with Jane in the whole hour not care to fix her lapel, because supposedly she was wearing a blazer or a shirt and her lapel was just sticking out awkwardly.
That ENCA is like, really, they've turned into ANN7. Okay, let's get Cindy in here. We're wasting time when this great woman is sitting here and she's ready to talk to us again. I don't know what kind of crazy she is to come and talk to us. I mean, it's just madness. Hey, waste your Friday morning talking to us. She's got a new song. Let me play you a little bit of that so you can get an idea of what she's up to at the moment. And then we'll talk to Cindy Alto here. The song's called Hole in a Ring. Listen to this.
Dirt. I don't understand the way we break hearts.
This is called Hole in a Ring. It's nothing sexual, is it? No, it's not.
No.
All right. Pop on those headphones. How are you, Cindy Alter?
I'm so good today.
Nice to see you.
I've been up since 5 a.m. How are you good?
You like waking up at 5 a.m. to come and see schlubs like me?
You know what? There's certain times that I don't mind waking up at 5 a.m.
Okay.
Today, and the prospect of Krispy Kreme donuts.
Oh, you
donuts.
Bought donuts for us. Look at you. You see, you know how to bribe the right people.
That's it.
Well, it wasn't a bribe. I would have brought money if there was a bribe.
Yeah, this is South Africa, actually. We should be very...
thank you. Bribes Nobody gets bribed by donuts nowadays.
No, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fantastic. I was just thinking and reminiscing this morning about the first time we had you in here.
Yes.
And what a great conversation we had and how you're one of my favorite guests.
Wow.
You are. Because you
know that.
Well, you remember you came in and we just heard your stories of all the crazy shit you got up to in the 80s. And, you know?
What a life.
Well, what a life.
I am such... I know it sounds so freaking trite, but... I'm a lucky person. Mm. Not lucky because you have to create your own luck. I don't believe that you get luck. Mm-hmm. You know, oh yeah, you're lucky. You make your luck and you make your life and you have to keep creating it. And I was just talking earlier to Sia that you've got to stay relevant and you've got to stay on top of it and all that. But for me, it's not about the publicity side of it. For me, it's about me.
Yeah.
It's my life, and I want to steer this train, you know?
Well, you say that you're staying relevant and all that stuff.
Yes.
But you don't seem to be one of those people who's under pressure to do that. We were just talking about how, you know, Michael Bloomberg wants to spend more money to stay relevant. And even though he's made all this fortune and he's been a tremendous success in his life, he wants more. Donald Trump wants more.
It's more. That's the word.
Michael Jackson wanted more. And I was thinking about like the 80s because I went to this concert last Saturday with A-ha, right?
Lovely.
Now, you remember them? What
of
huge stars they were in the 1980s?
Yeah.
And they were a cool kind of famous right now because I watched these guys and you might get recognized here or there, but you're not famous. You're not like movie star famous.
But I like that.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's what I was getting
to
with you.
I love that, yes. So that's where I'm at if I want to think of myself.
Yeah, of course you are.
I like being that.
There will be people who, when you go to the shops, will go, oh my God, that's Cindy Alter. Do you remember Substitute?
The worst ones are, I'm usually always in like my gym clothes or yoga clothes.
Oh.
That's how I walk
around.
Minding
your own business.
You know, I do mind my own business. And people will go, hi, are you that singer? And I'm like... I'm that singer, yeah.
Does
but
it irritate
sweet.
You a little bit?
No.
Promise me, because...
I promise you, it doesn't irritate me.
I get annoyed when people say, you're that guy from Idols. Say hello to Randall for me. Like, I get a little annoyed, because I'm like, surely you could think of something else to say.
Yeah, but we have to remember who they are. They are the people watching.
Yeah.
They're the people sitting in the seats, bums in seats.
Right.
Fans, etc., etc. They buy it.
Yes.
Whatever it may be.
Right.
And I don't kneel at the feet of gratitude, you know, like, oh, please be grateful all the time. Yeah. But I am grateful for that.
Right.
That, yay, somebody did remember who I was.
Yeah.
But when I'm in my pajamas.
It's not the best. Yeah, it's such an interesting thing.
Yeah, like, the fame one is a very interesting one. I'd like to ask you, do you think, because I've heard, I remember reading something Jack Nicklaus talking about is once you sign over, once you choose this life, you belong to them now, which I thought was quite haunting. And for someone like you, I'd love to know what you think of that.
It's the absolute truth. That is why the industry, music industry, movie industry, this kind of thing, has so many tragedies and so many victims because you have to keep this together, your head.
Well, look at Brenda Fassi. These are people you used to hang,
I used to hang out with Brenda.
Yeah, you used to hang out with Brenda.
And I watched the decline and I'm like, Brenda, hold it together, stay strong, hold it together.
Was,
she bought
out of control.
Into...
Yeah.
The fame, the thing.
Jesus.
You know, and I'm not judging
her.
What
a talented girl.
And what a talented girl. And from when she started that cute little thing to what she ended up. Listen, I could have been one of those tragedies too, you know. Mm. I had enough downers.
Did you ever get a bit self-destructive?
I was at times. I wrote in my book there were times that I was self-destructive. It's a lonely life, baby. Mm. You know, she lives a lonely life.
Yeah, where's that from?
Song from...
That she wants.
It's a little
Ace of
baby.
Bass.
Ace of Bass, exactly. And many people have written about it over the years. As songwriters write about their inner feelings, and they live, I live my therapy in public.
Yeah,
you know, I just write about it and stuff. But we are the voices of the nations. You know, when you think of Dylan and stuff, he was writing about Vietnam.
Yeah.
You know, Jackson Brown writing about...
You were writing about prostitutes.
Yes, exactly.
I'll be a prostitute.
Oh, well, I had to write about something.
That's true,
no, but
darling.
What's interesting to me, too, I mean, last year we lost Johnny Clegg, right?
Yes.
Again, these are people who you would perform with. Sometimes you'd be at the same concert with these
and
guys
and
girls.
Yeah, you knew them.
And it was a small community of artists in the 80s, and it was a very mixed up community because the artists were, they didn't give a shit for the rules. And they could almost get away with some of the rules being broken where ordinary people couldn't.
Yes, as we did. And we were pushing the envelope.
So you knew the girls from Joy, you knew Brenda, you knew, you know.
We worked on the same stages.
Yvonne Chaka Chaka.
Yvonne and I go back a way back.
Mm.
You know, I sang on all her first songs.
Really?
Yeah.
You do BVs.
Yeah.
Look at you. Secret weapon in some of Yvonne's tracks.
And yeah, definitely.
Which one? Like, I'm burning up.
No, not that one. I said, I'm in love with a DJ.
Yeah, oh, did you?
Mm-hmm. I'm in love.
And there was a song they were starting, Yvonne was starting out, and there was a band called, it was a made up band called Freeway. It was Cindy Alter really singing all the songs. And there was a, every day, every night, every day. And every night, and I had the accent and everything. I was there, little Imlongo there.
Wow,
was singing with all the black artists.
You were lying to the blacks.
Not meaning to. The producers did it all.
No, sure. But there were some powerful producers in South Africa then, because the music industry was so small. And it was small in South Africa. There was a lot of money to be made. There were some very powerful people. They controlled all the songs. Yeah, sure, but there was massive creativity.
And the musicians were as one in those days. The musicians, we all met at all the shows. We were all cool with each other. Now everybody's like, you know, I don't feel a solidarity with musicians now. But then again, there aren't those clubs anymore. Because before there were the clubs and the circuit, and you'd always bump into people on the circuit and the clubs.
You must have had some parties too.
Yeah.
Jesus. I'd love to go back and like see you partying with Brenda and PJ Powers.
Yeah, those were the we have.
Damn.
There's some stories
I mean, like, it was quite innocent compared to what people get up to now, right?
I mean, swear to you, it was so low-key.
Yeah, it wasn't like it was in America, for example, where there was drugs, sex, and rock and roll.
No. There was sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Oh, it was different order, but the same thing.
But in such a small way, I mean, when I think of Clout Girls leaving this country in 1978 to go overseas,
mm-hmm.
I mean, firstly, let's talk politics for a second, that everybody was banned.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to come here, and you're not allowed to go anywhere.
Right.
So apartheid was like, nobody from South Africa is allowed to leave the shores and come and play anywhere.
And when you did go overseas, some people would treat you as persona non grata.
Would.
You know, you were nothing.
Definitely, we were persona non grata. And they eventually found a way to sort of calm the masses and say, look, they're a Dutch band. You know, so I suppose we would
lie. You'd lie
way
to people
back.
There.
We didn't say it, but the press
promoters.
Said it. And they said, you know, they're a Dutch band, and that's why they can come out and be here. But we were number one everywhere, so they had to have us there. It was like, we've got to get this band here. You're number one on all the charts around Europe and New Zealand and blah, blah, blah.
It's so interesting you bring that up, because I was thinking, looking at Morton Harkett and A-ha the other day, imagining how they feel about Take On Me, which is probably their biggest song, right?
It was like a pop thingy
thing. But he's a very serious musician.
I know.
Too serious. Takes himself very seriously. But I thought, what do they feel when they have to do this bloody song again? How do you feel about Substitute when you hear it now? Are you a little bit annoyed by it? Does it get in your way? Or are you still, yeah, that was, I'm happy. If people remember that about me, that's good enough for me.
I had to come to terms with a lot of things about that. Okay. Firstly, I was always pigeonholed from the beginning. Oh, Cindy from Clout.
Yeah.
Then I was Cindy from Zia.
Yes.
And when I went to America, I was just Cindy Alter. And that, for me, was very empowering to find myself as an artist, as a singer-songwriter. It was a totally different ballgame. I never sang Substitute. After Clout, I never sang Substitute for 20-something years.
You had a time where you actually didn't like the song. You had no relationship with it.
It wasn't that was exactly it, Gareth, that I didn't have a relationship with it anymore. Mm. And in America, it wasn't relevant. It was like Cindy Alter, the songwriter. Cindy Alter working in Nashville. Cindy Alter doing different things. So when I came back to South Africa, and it was after the cancer that I wanted to come back and just go pressure off. Because in America, you're moving, shaking, you're pushing. If you're not pushing and moving and shaking, you're like zero. So you have to work hard.
By the way, that cancer hasn't come back, has it?
No.
Okay, good.
17 years.
God damn it. Well done. That is magic.
Thank you.
That is magic.
That is magic. And that is something I...
Okay, now I'm going to traumatize you and bring back the cancer. Listen to this.
Oh, no.
Takes a bit more than that to traumatize me, darling.
I just want everybody to have a little trip down memory lane. Right? Sam, listen to you. You've been waiting much too long now. It looks like she's not coming home.
Sam, you've been loyal, true and faithful. All the time with being alone. If I could get the same dedication, I'd give you everything in creation. If she doesn't come back.
Love it. All right, so two things. First of all, was there a Sam or is it made up?
It was a made up. Okay. Because the original song was written by a guy called Willie Wilson for the Righteous Brothers.
Wow.
And it was, if you had to hear, it was an album track of theirs. It wasn't a hit of theirs. And it was Righteous Brothers.
Girl, it's a ballad.
You've been waiting much too long now. It was totally, if you hear it.
By the way, don't you feel sorry for the other Righteous Brother? I mean, there were two of them, right? Yeah, and the one guy, he hardly
Bill
had any.
Bill Medley was like the dude, you
Bill
know.
Bill was the main singer. But
and
then,
the other one sang Unchained Melody, you know, so.
But he hardly had anything else to do. He was, most of the time, if they ever did concerts, he would just sit there on a bar stool. It was sad. So,
but he still made the money, so it's okay.
Yeah, sure.
He made all of
course.
Everything.
And maybe that's also the right level of famous, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe you just want to be the
dude in the background.
Yeah, like sometimes that's the guitarist, sometimes is the guy who has the best life, maybe the drummer, maybe the bass player. Lead singer sometimes has a horrible time dealing with all that attention and then not dealing with it and then being alone and then having drugs and... You know how it goes. Anyway, the other thing about Clout, the O in Clout was almost like panties on a girl, right?
It was a bikini.
Yes. If you look up the logo, it's a very sexy little logo.
It's very cute, yeah. Listen, I can't fault our producer, even though he stole all our money. We cannot fault him.
Who's this man?
His name is Graham Beggs. Everybody knows
still
him in
alive?
The industry. He is alive. He lives
son of a bitch. Where
in
is he?
Seychelles with the yacht that we bought him.
No.
Has he ever invited you on the yacht?
No, darling. If I was invited, I've got two beautiful limpet mines.
Yeah, you put them under the yacht.
There we go.
No, you know what?
And so he's having a great time.
I laugh about it now because I'm like, whatever. That guy did not stop me. He could not stop me.
What a story, though.
Yeah,
you can sit there,
story.
Other people go, oh, you know, my employer didn't give me my UIF for the month of May.
I lost millions.
Millions.
I mean, in 1981, it was stated in a court case, because he was being sued by another band. It was in a court case, he'd been audited, and Clout, at that point, had sold 10 million albums in 1981. Up to now,
he pocketed the money.
it was, oh, you know, we're on tour and we have to pay for this and we have to do that and nee. And we were like with big record companies overseas. Mm. You know, like Polygram and
yeah, those were the days.
Capital.
Those guys had so much money.
Yeah. So, and the saddest part for me, listen, I had to get over that quick.
Yeah. It's hard to get over a couple of million rand.
That, not just that, just being thrown to the wolves.
For one,
you
wouldn't be sitting here with me if you'd had those millions. You could be you'd be lounging on a yacht.
Well,
you wouldn't be talking to me.
I think I'd still be living in LA.
Did you like LA?
I loved LA.
Why?
I liked it because, as I said earlier, I found Cindy there.
Mm.
I found Cindy Alter, and the people who I made friends with didn't know who the hell I was, so they made friends with Cindy.
Yeah, there's no fake nonsense.
Okay, so there was none of that fake nonsense. People say, oh, LA is so fake. You can bypass all of that. It depends what you're looking for. I wasn't looking for that. I was looking for soulful, deep, spiritual connection.
Yeah, but the problem with LA is everyone else is looking for that.
Well,
most of them. And that, you meet anyone in LA, they're all on their way to stardom.
LA is a cesspool of broken dreams.
Sure.
That's what it is.
Yeah, that's what it
is. And you either become a victim of that, one of the casualties of the war, or you don't.
You crawl out of the swamp.
You crawl out the swamp, or you just keep crawling as fast as you can so that the hands of the swamp don't come and get you.
Sure.
But you're speaking to a great point there. I wanted to ask you know, something, especially as South Africans, we don't really have greatness around us all the time. You were like the definition of great. Number one, not in South Africa, Africa, the world. You know, like you said, greatness is a lonely place.
It is.
And what was it like when you were there? Like, did you start to descend and start to believe? And did you ever feel yourself becoming that?
No. Listen, there were times.
And sorry, most of us will never know greatness either.
No, sure. Look, there are times that I used it to my advantage. Sure. But it was just in naughty little things like see a guy I like and go, come here, I want that. Should I have that one? Or should I, you know, I was just, and I was young and I was hot and whatever. I'm not anymore. I'm who I am. But point being, yes, there's that kind of delicious kind of little bit of power. But it was never, for me personally, I know other people can get caught up in it. That was never the point of the whole thing. For me, I was chosen to be a musician from when I was a born person, from very young. Music chose me. And always it was about the music for me. I want to be on stage and I want to sing and play music because that's who I am. Mm. What comes of it is a byproduct of all of it. And it's truly not really mine. It doesn't belong to me. It was given to me. So I just borrow it in a way. How I choose to use it or abuse it is... You know,
why are you still writing music? Because you love it?
I love it.
You're not doing it to prove a point to anyone.
I have no point to prove.
And there's no money in writing songs anymore. There's money in performing. People must offer you gigs all the time.
Yes, thank goodness. I'm still working a lot. I'm traveling a lot. I got hooked up in Germany again. I went there last year. It was very strange. I thought there was just going to be a whole bunch of old Clout fans there.
Yes.
And it was just a whole bunch of different people.
But the Germans really
they
do like...
They love music.
Yes, and they like nostalgia.
Yes, and
they
were
do
interested.
Love the 80s.
Yeah. They were interested, and I had all these little... Well, I only did 4 shows because we were testing the waters.
Yeah.
But they were all very well sold out shows. I sold like 60 albums.
Jeez, well done.
Now, you think in this day and age, download, streaming, all that stuff, let me tell you, there are still people buying product.
Yeah, they like that. They like that. They want to have something product in their hands. Tell me quickly, when you do these gigs, you perform a set, do you have to do a lot of the old stuff because otherwise people won't come? And if you do some of the new stuff, do they like that after the show because it might be the first time they hear it?
I do... 2 different things. So I'll do my original shows where I'm only doing my music, a couple of choice covers that I really like, and obviously Substitute and Save Me.
Yeah, they have to have it.
But I have to. And I had to just come to terms with it. And so I don't vomit anymore. But we call
it
that song.
Give the people what they want.
Yes, thank you.
Oh.
you've got it. So if you want to always swim against the current, good luck to you. You know, I don't fall in, but I carve my way through.
Well, it's brilliant people like Billy Joel. He doesn't. He hates doing Piano Man. He hates performing that song.
But he does it.
He does it because people want it.
People want to hear it. So I call substitute that song, and Save Me's that other song. Because people say, "Are you going to do that song?" I'm like, "Of course I'm going to do that song." They don't even have to say what it is. And then you'll do that other song, hey? I said, "Of course I'll do that other song." And I mean, I walked into a show in Bloemfontein on the weekend. I was with two other guys. We've got this little three-piece, not threesome, three-piece called.
Well, good for you, either way.
Either's very good.
Particular.
Two guys and me. It's lovely. Yeah,
sure.
It works very well.
Very nice.
And as I walked in, nearly every single person that I walked past said, "Are you going to do that song?
Yeah,
are
you going to do that song?"
And then that other song. So when I said I hadn't done that for years and years when I was living in America and stuff, when I came back to South Africa, put Clout back together again just for fun. And, of course, that song came back. And then every gig I've done after that, everybody's like, "You've got to do that song."
Where are the others? Where are they? What are they up to?
So,
any of them in destitution and poverty?
No.
No, good. I'm
Isn't
pleased
that
to
great? Isn't that great?
It is.
It is great.
Yeah, it is.
Sometimes you hear these horrible stories.
Horrible, horrible stories. So-and-so. Sure. Listen, I wanted to go and live on the streets for a while because I didn't want any responsibility.
I've sometimes had that fantasy.
You know,
drive past a homeless person.
Do you know what I'm talking
about? It's a sick and twisted thing. You look at them and
you can let go of everything.
Yes, you don't have family responsibilities. You don't have a bond. You don't have to worry about going to work. For some people,
everything.
Even though it's just a fantasy, they do have that moment where they want to be on the streets. So I'm glad you acknowledge that.
I did acknowledge it, and people think I'm mad when I say that.
Yeah.
Cindy, don't be ridiculous.
No, you are, but it's obvious you're mad.
You know, I have to be mad.
Yeah.
If you lose your insanity, you'll go insane.
If you lose your...
Do you know what I'm saying?
All right, so tell me about the others.
So...
let's just be clear, they're not on the street.
No, they're not on the street. So Lee, our bass player, lives in the UK with her husband, who she met on a Clout tour.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's sweet.
Beautiful.
It was divine.
Uh-huh.
Jenny is living in Cape Town with her husband and son.
Okay.
She's
Sounds
great.
Very domestic she's and very, happy.
Yeah, and she's good. She does a whole bunch of things. She was
you
always
still talk
the music
to them all?
One. Yeah, we do.
Okay, good.
You know, we see each other when I go to UK.
So like when John and Yoko went off, none of them spoke to them anymore.
No.
Okay. That's because you were sleeping
we're
the whole
good.
Time.
Yeah.
Exactly. Having sex with Yoko.
In public.
Yeah. In a big bed. That
in a big bed in a shop window.
Yeah.
Remember that one?
I do.
Yeah, that was well.
So, okay.
And then... Inge is still playing in Clout. She's our drummer.
Yes.
Still a powerhouse. Still a powerhouse. She can play those drums like crazy. She's mad. I love her to death.
Okay.
I think Glenda, I don't know what Glenda, I think Glenda runs an event company.
Oh, wow.
She was the keyboard player.
Yeah. So
then we
this
got
was
guys
a real,
in.
Yeah, but hang on. These are the women of Clout.
The women of Clout.
We often talk about those days where women had no power, that you had to have a man somewhere.
Well,
you were ahead of your time.
This was the start. I was loving to mention that.
Yeah.
The start of the women's movement.
Yeah.
When girls would come to our shows and go, "Oh my God, girls can do it.
All on
girls
their own.
Can do whatever they want.
Don't need a guy."
Yeah. And it was very fresh and very new. And we'd start these things. I mean, we started those perms.
You had
suddenly all
big
the girls were having the
hair.
Big 80s perms. And we were wearing leather pants and
ooh,
tight lycra.
How racy. Mm,
very racy. And suddenly girls were wearing those big long t-shirts over the lycra pants with a big belt.
That's right.
That was the thing. And we were just like...
Do you have any of your 80s clothes? Like if we had an 80s party and I invited you, would you know what to wear?
I would.
Oh, I'll bet.
I'd have to wear a wig, but I would.
Oh.
Listen, those perms. I mean, if someone had come within an inch of you with a cigarette lighter, you would have gone up in flames.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And everything was like very big. You know, if you looked at the
big and
Google
bright.
Those pictures.
Big, bright, and neon.
Definitely lots of those. And for me also, I had this very long fringe so that nobody could really see my eyes, and it was my hiding. You know, for me, it was almost
Have you ever sat with a shrink and spoken about this with a fringe?
No.
Sounds to me like there could be an issue
it.
There.
No,
you
knew. I knew it.
Okay.
I knew
That's
it.
That's why you said your therapy
way.
Was out
yeah.
in public.
You know, I knew that.
Good for you.
I loved being there doing what I was doing. The fame and adulation thing was a bit weird for me.
And so you hid behind your fringe?
Yeah.
See?
I hid behind my fringe.
Everybody's got a... I'm telling you this.
And now I haven't had a fringe to hide behind, so I have to be
I'd love someone to
there.
Do a doctoral thesis on music and musicians and and their psychological issues.
Can you imagine?
I mean, there must be some. I mean, somebody must
some.
Say something about this. No, I mean, someone must
you
have
mean
done...
some issues or some doctorate?
No. I'm saying some people have probably done doctorates about this because... That story about the fringe, that was your, you were kind of, you had a curtain,
I had a curtain.
Right over your eyes, just so that you could always be backstage.
I could see them, but they couldn't really see me.
Yeah.
They could just see a little bit of my eyes, you know.
It's like
the
that
longer the fringe,
Sia,
the better.
You know, she...
She's not even public. She doesn't even appear.
No.
Some She's like completely behind that fringe.
So you keep up with what... going on in music now.
I do, absolutely, because I'm a songwriter. So I've got to know what's happening.
What do you like that's on at the moment? Is there anything that's really got you?
There's some sort of deeper stuff. There's a guy called Blur, and then there's and then there's
that's great.
Lewis
unbelievable.
Capaldi is writing beautiful
like that,
songs.
Huh? That's nice.
Beautiful songs,
yeah.
You know.
Ugly bastard,
good,
though.
Very ugly. And, hello.
This is George
an
Meany.
Ugly bastard.
No, George.
Not
ugly.
At all.
This is Cindy Alter. I think she's hitting on you, George.
No, hitting. I'm
what,
too
what
old to hit on
like
anybody.
Lewis Capaldi, huh?
I like his stuff. He's writing good songs. I like some of Ed's. Sheeran's
Ed Sheeran,
stuff,
yeah, he's a good songwriter.
You know, he's a good, but some of his stuff just sounds the same. And even his new song is the same as the other one.
Oh, you're sticking the knife into Ed Sheeran this morning,
no, I would
aren't you?
Never, God, okay. No. I would never stick a knife in Ed Sheeran. I would beg for his money. I would be on my knees for his money.
Well,
but anyway,
I like this new song of yours. So you released it in December?
Yes, just to like... You know, get it out. It wasn't like we were doing a big Christmas release or anything like that. Just wanted to get it out, and it's the first time I haven't recorded a song that I wrote.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I didn't write the song, which is interesting.
Do we still do albums, or is that old school now?
No.
People just release singles.
You know, at this time, people release singles, but the singles end up on albums.
Okay. All right.
So I'm working towards. I'm actually going to do like a best of kind of album, like a compilation of all songs that I've, I'll pick like two songs from every album I've ever recorded in my life.
So I'm always happy to see you. Are we able
Thank
to
you.
See you perform though? Where,
yes.
Where are we doing some shows?
I've got a really good one coming up at the Radium.
Oh, nice.
The Radium's always
a good
awesome.
Venue.
I love that venue. It's a music venue. 7th of March. And it's just around the corner from my birthday, so we're having a big fat bash. Lots of tequila.
Fantastic.
Come on.
You got me interested. Doesn't that sound good,
March.
George?
It does sound good. Is that the Radium?
George, why is your microphone
Radium
not working?
Beer
what have you done?
There we go. Yeah, isn't that the one in Loibota?
It is.
Yeah, I've been there.
Indeed.
All right.
There. Radium's such a great place. I mean, geez, everybody plays there. Black Cat Bones and... Gunshot Blue, and anybody plays there.
Fantastic. All right, Cindy, hang around, because George is going to tell us about the world of motoring. How are you, George?
I'm good, and you, Gareth?
How is Las Vegas?
Very good. This is probably the best trip I've had in 7 years.
Jesus, what did you do?
You know, when you're into an industry and you start building connections and you start building a network and you start getting to know, you know, the people in America... The visits just get better and better and better because you just get introduced to things that you would never be introduced to 7 years ago the first
do
time you go.
You go now and you actually recognize people and you see some of the same familiar faces and
we keep in contact the whole year.
That's brilliant.
First world country, and I mean the one of the biggest reasons I go there is because they're doing stuff that we haven't done.
Okay,
it's that simple.
Give us some insight.
Podcasting.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, you've done that. You were on board there from the get.
No, I'm not saying we partner with you to do podcasting, but it's like podcasting. Yeah. You know, you go there, you see all of the stuff that they're doing, and gives you an idea of what to put into the recipe for the edge.
Are they all still super excited about electric cars and what do they call it? Autonomous driving and.
Yeah.
That's still the rage. Huh?
It's still the rage. I mean, you don't see it in the streets too much. I saw two or three Teslas every single day that I was there.
Okay.
On the streets. But, you know, maybe 20 or 30% of the time you'll see an electric car. Most of the cars are still gas powered.
Cindy, would you ever let a computer drive you around?
No, I think that's a little bit too far for me.
You wouldn't trust it?
No, I wouldn't trust it.
Okay.
I wouldn't trust an AI to do a whole bunch of stuff for me. I would not.
Okay.
I just think it's like, you know those futuristic movies that we've all seen?
iRobot.
Like, all that stuff where we are controlled by.
Mm-hmm. It scares you.
Well, Elon Musk is on your side. He reckons we've got to be scared of this stuff.
No, but and he's a bright boy.
Mm. Yeah.
South Africa. You know, and he's the Tesla guy, so he knows what's cooking.
So, George, what can you share with us that you learned?
Well, that I learned over there was that the automotive industry suffers from the same challenges we suffer from. It's just at scale. It's just huge. You know, their market is – I think I'm going to start referring to South Africa as Little America.
Why?
The dynamics are just the same.
Okay.
The dynamics are just the same. We're just a state compared to – you know, within America,
yeah.
and you know, the thing I learned is that we mimic them more than you would imagine.
Oh, sure.
I think
totally agree. Let's talk music for a minute. I've always said, ever since this beginning of time, that South Africans want to be American. They copy the American style, especially rap and hip hop and
well,
all
think
that
about
stuff.
It. Music, totally. Culture, it's
culture,
all
clothes,
movies. It's all infused in what we
absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely,
yeah, for exactly. Sure.
All right.
So, I mean, there's challenges in South Africa that the Americans have sorted out. I mean, their data structures when it comes to building clever software, their underlying data structures are solid. So their governments collect proper data on cars. Their data is available to a business. If you wanted to buy that data, you can buy it and then build a business on top of it. For instance, you know, the VIN databases are freely available. History checks on cars are available. You can scan a license plate and you can get the details on a car. In South Africa, you can't get that. So those are the challenges that we've got to overcome.
Mm.
But it doesn't make our behavior any different. It doesn't make our needs and wants any different. So it's just we've got bigger challenges.
All right. Tell us what's in the news this week.
So the Nissan NP200, you know the...
No, I don't.
The Bucky?
I'm gonna have to look it up.
The Bucky?
The Nissan Bucky.
The Nissan Bucky.
Nissan NP200.
NP300.
Okay, let me have a look at this.
Oh,
yes, that one. Got you.
Yes. So
yeah,
that
there
one.
There we go.
That's the
good
one.
Good old solid Nissan Bucky.
Has failed its crash test.
Oh,
so
shit.
They're sending Nissan NP300 Buckies to Africa that have got a zero rating from the NCAP.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so this is quite a big story in that the agency that does the crash testing, the global NCAP, took a Nissan Navara and an NP300 and sent them hauling into each other at 56 kilometers an hour head on.
Mm-hmm.
And their report was that the occupants of the NP300 would die.
Well,
fatal.
Can I just say that if you're going to go at how many, 300 kilometers an hour?
No, 56 kilometers an hour.
Oh, that's not so fast.
Mm. Yeah, it's NP300.
Oh. Okay.
That's a bit weird.
All right, if you see one of those on the road, go into those because you'll survive.
Yeah.
They won't.
Oh, lovely,
I didn't think about
here
it that way.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Nissan's going to do something about this. But,
well, maybe. What are you going to do?
And then quite a big thing which has been kicking around for the last probably over a year is that OEMs allow franchise dealers to service your car.
What's an OEM?
An original equipment manufacturer. So like BMW, Mercedes, mm-hmm. VW, all of those guys. They give the license to the franchise dealership. The franchise dealership then services your car.
Right.
And if you take your car to a franchise dealership, your warranty remains intact and your service plan remains intact.
But if you go and have it it meddled with by some corner shop panel beater, then you don't retain that certification.
Exactly. So now, recently, the Competitions Commission announced that it will put a plan in action that aims to level the playing field between OEMs, original equipment manufacturers, and independent service providers, which are non-OEM-based workshops.
I understand. Are we for or against this, George?
I'm on the fence. It depends on the. I think it depends on the level of, you know, certification that that ISP has. So I think that there needs to be really strict rules around what boxes you need to tick.
How long do you think it'll be before a company, and this is a major gap in the market, some company deals directly with these OEMs and buys them from them and lists them on a website, and people can go and buy the parts themselves at cost or just a little bit of profit to the website, whatever it might be, and then they take the part to a mechanic and they say, put this in.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's about the part as much as it is about the certification of fitting that part.
But these guys always tell you, oh, we got to wait for 3 months for parts.
Well, that's if you drive an imported car, yeah?
Well, can't we get this going here where you can buy the parts and then find someone who's able to install it properly?
Maybe in this case that will happen, because these independent service providers, if they're certified by the OEM as good technicians, maybe you can go buy the part and ask him to fit it.
Yeah, I wouldn't let Bolelo put something in my car. I'd fucking die in an accident. But
God forbid.
But or Cindy Alter, for that matter. I know she's good with a microphone, but she's not so good with a spanner. And
no, not good with spanners.
No.
Not even good with a GPS, let me tell you.
What do you do when you break down on the side of the road? You call someone.
Thank goodness, yeah. I haven't yet, but I do call somebody.
Can you change
away.
A tire?
I can't, because I can't unloosen the nuts. Those bolts. What are they called? Are they nuts and bolts? What are they called? Those big, fat nuts. What are they called?
This is just getting worse.
I'm sorry.
This is great.
Well, I'm not good at dismantling nuts, okay? So let's stop right there.
All right, George. I'm trying to think of synonyms, but they still don't work.
George, before Cindy and Sia start going crazy about nuts, let's move
on.
They're called
wheel nuts.
They're called wheel nuts. There you go.
See, I was right.
You're right. They're called wheel nuts.
And can I ask something? I know I'm just like here, but talking about the certification thing and all that, so you can buy the part.
Yeah.
And then go to someone and anybody, not us.
Well, this is they're going to change it,
But if that person is certified, fine. Would that do anything about the warranty? Would that
Well, that's the whole debate, right?
So that's the question I have.
That's the whole debate.
And so I'm just the man in
the street. Look at you getting stuck into this automotive conversation.
I'm
I like
very
this.
Interested.
No, that's exactly right, because that's the whole debate. The OEMs don't want to honor the warranties outside of the franchise network,
but
right?
But that's also because they want to keep the money in there.
Well, yes. I mean, it could be a combination of the profit and the level of service.
Of course.
So you could argue that six ways from Sunday. Yes. But the Competitions Commission is going to potentially rule on the ISPs almost forcing the OEMs to certify them so that your warranty doesn't get lost. Mm. So that's the whole debate that's going on at the moment.
I understand that.
And then driving a Lamborghini or a Range Rover or any expensive car for that matter, be careful if you get a recall call, because there's been incidents in South Africa now where you get a phone call and the person on the other end of the line says, there's something wrong with your car, the airbags buggered, there's some electronic issue. Do not drive it. We're coming to fetch it. We're phoning you from the original equipment manufacturer. And
South Africa.
And they pitch up with a truck bed.
Flatbed.
Flatbed truck. They put your Lamborghini on the back of the flatbed, make you sign a bunch of fraudulent papers, and they drive off with your Lamborghini.
And you never see it again.
No. You never see it again. And a day later, you phone to say, how far is my car and what car? What are you talking about?
That happens to people.
It's happening to people.
Oh, my God.
So be careful. OEMs won't phone you up and then suddenly come and fetch your car. If you do get a phone call, phone another dealership from another province and confirm that this problem does exist.
I'm always amazed at the level of fraud that can be committed.
The creativity.
If they'd use that creativity to positive
for good,
ends,
yes. Mm.
Can you imagine how amazing this country would be? For example,
we just our lights just went off. Don't worry, the generator kicks in.
No, it's fine. I'm just laughing at the irony of it.
Yeah, like if the Eskom people were, instead of being crooks,
if they turned
that genius for thieving
absolutely
into a genius for maintenance.
100%.
Exactly.
We'd have so much power.
Everything on let's go there. But anyway, yeah, there'll be a lot of power.
I read. I don't know the details of this, but I believe Cape Town is contracting with an independent party to get electricity.
I don't blame them. Mm. I think Johannesburg should be doing it, but
so that they can get off Eskom.
Yeah, we should all get off.
Of course, we should
go off grid.
We should all go off Eskom. Anything to do with state owned,
we
should get the hell out of there.
Well, talking about things that should stay off the motoring grid, your kids. So, two kids in America stole two Lamborghinis, a black one and a white one, broke the front window of a dealership, stole these two Lamborghinis, and went on a joyride. So the cops saw these three cars, two Lamborghinis, and then...
How old are these kids?
They were in their teens, mid-teens.
But remember, they get their license at like 15.
No, they didn't have licenses, these guys.
But you've got some kind of chutzpah to steal Lamborghinis.
They stole two Lamborghini Uruses, you know, the SUV. Hmm. And they went on a joyride, and cops saw these three cars. Obviously, they were in the original car, which was a little runabout. And the cops decided to stop the little car, not the two Lamborghinis. Found that the kids driving the getaway car didn't have licenses either. And the two Lamborghinis sped away, but they then crashed into each other.
That's really stupid. That is really stupid.
And so they got busted. Elon Musk takes a dig at Bill Gates because Bill Gates bought a Porsche Taycan, you know, the fully electric Porsche Taycan.
Oh, yes.
So Bill Gates bought a Porsche Taycan.
Well, let him have what he wants. He's got lots of money.
He's allowed.
He's allowed, yeah.
Bill's allowed.
And what is Elon's problem with him?
So Gates told a YouTube reviewer in an interview that he's purchased his first ever SUV, first ever EV Porsche Taycan, and he called the car very, very cool. And he also said that that Tesla is leading the market. So Elon got upset with this and tweeted, "I'm disappointed because a lot of people are going to watch the interview and then are going to trust Bill's word for it and even consider EVs. Why? Because Bill is a really smart guy and he's told the press that EVs haven't reached the ranges that they can get to yet," which is what Elon was upset about, because the Teslas do have range.
Hmm. So it's basically, this is a billionaire fight. We have nothing to do with it.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Talking about the Porsche Taycan, and very lastly, a Porsche Taycan in Florida, U.S., caught on fire in the garage.
Yes, but that's because the people were making a fire in the garage.
Probably.
More than likely. So it's not only Teslas that catch fire.
Oh, yeah. My God. How do you spell Taycan?
T-A-Y-C-A-N.
Okay.
Yeah, stupid name. They come up with such stupid names for these cars.
Like Cayenne.
Yeah.
Cheyenne.
They give them these Native American names.
Cayenne.
And apparently Pajero is Pajero is like wanker.
Is it?
Yeah.
In Puerto Rico.
Well, I don't know if that's true. No, I think in Spanish.
Well, it's generally wankers driving Pajeros.
It's got wheel nuts.
It's got wheel nuts.
As long as it's got wheel nuts, I'm fine with
Someone can take those nuts off. All right. Thank you, everybody. It's been a fun morning.
Thank you.
Cindy Alter, always nice to see you.
What fun.
What a
thank
pleasure.
Thank you so much.
George, thanks for popping by. And thank you for joining us this morning. We will see you on Monday bright and early at 6 o'clock. It is time for Stop to Start. That's right. Season 1, Episode 4. And let you in on what's going on here. Role models come in different forms, and in South Africa, we have to say it's undeniable that soccer players inspire many. Siphiwe Tshabalala and Teko Modise, who are two of our most famous soccer players in all of South African sport history, they stopped by to talk about how Stop to Start is a creative and audacious combination, setting out to positively impact young men. And I had a chat to them at Dobsonville Stadium when we were there for a Stop to Start event, which is all sponsored by APSA. To their credit, they're doing something to help young men become better at all the things that we need young men to be, giving them role modeling, giving them a workshop on how they should deal with emotion, lots of other interesting things. Take a listen to this. Here are Siphiwe Tshabalala, Teko Modise, talking about why Stop to Start is important to them.
This is CliffCentral.com.
I'm very happy to be sitting opposite two of South Africa's most famous and incredibly successful footballers, Teko Modise, Siphiwe Tshabalala. How are you, gentlemen?
Good evening, sir.
It's good to see you both. And it's great to see you in an environment where obviously you're very comfortable. Both of you spend a lot of time in the footballing community, on the field. You're sitting here with a bunch of young men, though, today to do something very different. We know that we're in a country where there's a tremendous gender-based violence problem. We know that there are a lot of young men who grow up without fathers. We know that there are lots of these young men who are looking for role models and who idolize the two of you. It's an incredible opportunity to be able to share with them your own insights and to be able to give them an environment where they can feel that they matter, that they've got self-esteem, that they can become the kinds of successes that you guys are. But why did you feel that you could make a difference here today? Teko?
I think, first of all, the biggest challenge that the young boys are having is everybody that gets successful in the hood, they always move out. So they don't come back actually to share their story. So these boys don't actually know how to actually, or probably maybe have somebody that they can look up to, or maybe even listen to their stories or get their stories as well. So most of the time, like, you end up choosing anybody that you see around and that you think that can be a role model, because of now the success in the location, the definition of success in the location is very different. So now you find a person that drives a flashy car, that stays in the location, that's a successful person to you, then that automatically becomes a role model. What else? You people that actually had to go through certain stuff to actually persevere and make it in life, they don't come back to the wood and come back actually say their story. So for us to get this opportunity to come here and share with the boys our stories as well, like you said earlier on, this is a place where we're very comfortable. We're from Soweto. So for us to come back here and share stories with the boys actually from Soweto, it's an opportunity for us, and we're happy to have it, because I feel like also when me and Spear, and probably maybe when we started, we never had an opportunity for guys that actually played before us to come and tell us what to expect. You know, in the game, and for us to be here, I think it's we privilege and we own it.
And Spiwa, you're also a dad, so now you're starting to think about the things that maybe you haven't thought of since you were a young man.
Yeah,
and you're here around these young men, and in some way, you know, they're all looking for a dad as well to focus, to role model on. Some of them may have fathers who are very much in their lives, but a lot of young men in this country grow up without that. How does that make you feel in the context of this place?
Yeah, I think, you know, first one is to commend APSA for, you know, coming up with such a great worth initiative. You know, I think it's important to teach these youngsters at an early age. You know, I was grateful that I come from, a good family where I was raised by both my parents, you know, and most of them, you find that their fathers, they left them at an early age, but they managed to strive like Teko. You know, so it's important for us as boys who started in Soweto, in the township, who made it, and they're still humble to, you know, come back again and advise these youngsters, because there are so many social issues that we face in the society, and it's important for us to give our stories to motivate them. Focus on the boy child, because most of the time is, you know, girl child. There's teenage pregnancy. You know, it's always girls, but who make these girls pregnant? So this is very, you know, educational, and I'm looking forward to the day.
Well, it's interesting that in the workbook, which I looked through just now, they talk about things like self-esteem. I mean, Tagore, you don't seem like someone who's ever struggled with self-esteem. You've got a huge amount of confidence, and that obviously comes from your incredible athletic prowess. But were you ever a shy young man who didn't know your place, who wasn't sure of your identity, who was worried about rejection? Because a lot of these guys look at you and they go, he's bulletproof. He doesn't seem to have any of the problems I have.
I was a shy person when I grew up, and I struggled fitting in because I moved around a lot around Soweto. So I was struggling to adjust, because Soweto, as much as it's this big, it's very diverse, with this very, very different cultures and different languages. And being born in Midlands in a place where only Tswana was spoken, moving to a land where Zulu is popular and speaking Zulu looks like you're cool. So I had to adjust to that. But for for that to happen, I needed to study or learn how to speak Zulu for me to adjust to that. But what made me confident was the only time actually where I felt confident was when I was on the pitch. That's when I was playing football. That was the only place where I would feel confident. But other than that, I struggled a lot based on also how I grew up as well. So for me, my escape and my sanity was on the pitch, and that helped me a lot, because of once you get exposed into that level, now you get people that actually don't know who you are, where you're coming from. They're telling you how you play. So also that actually boosts your ego just a bit. So from a young age, the only place where I felt like, you know, I fitted in and I belonged was on the pitch. But I can imagine these young boys or the ones that are actually not playing sports, what do they use to as their sanity, as a place of peace? Sometimes I was fortunate enough that I chose sport, or sport chose me. And for them, you can imagine the challenges that they're facing. Some will probably maybe use drugs, some will probably use booze, or women for that matter. Mm. So some will use any escape for them too. So for us to be here is actually to try and make them understand there's so many ways that you can escape that, because the fatherless nation that we have, it's not something that's going to change today or tomorrow. But yet again, we fail to have so many role models that actually come and do such initiative in the hood, and actually try and encourage them as many times as possible, because we also don't want to be programming these kids into the fact that for you to survive, you need to be in sports. You know, so there's so many things that you can use to survive. You know, I think the best thing that we can tell them is actually to focus on school. But yet again, you in Soweto, most of the time you're in the environment where school is not a priority, because people that actually went to school, they end up chilling in the corners as well. So you end up struggling to find that balance whether school is important or not, because everybody that makes a little bit, they move out of Soweto. So we hardly have positive role models in Soweto. So we struggled as well as young boys. But then being given this opportunity to come here and actually let them understand that having a low self-esteem, it's not a taboo. It happens, you know. Not that we're here because we're bulletproof. We had to also overcome our fears and overcome our low self-esteem. So we used other different methods to overcome that. So I think it's important for us to actually let them know that.
Spiro, what kinds of things did you learn as a young man that you feel put you at an advantage going into life? Because there are, as Tego has just said, there's so many young men who grow up with bad role models, bad influences. They think that there's only one way out. I mean, it seems to me like you kind of, if you're lucky, you know, you're born to parents who have a better idea of what to do, and maybe they're more resources, and maybe they take more time with you, because it is hard. It's for a lot of parents, they're just trying to provide. That's number one. Is there stuff that you remember as a kid that you learnt, and even later on when you were a teenager and then into adulthood, that your father especially taught you?
Yeah, I think, both my parents were very strict. And for me, they were supportive since day one, you know. Since I was playing amateur football under 10s, you know, they would make time. And I remember even on their wedding day, you know, I had to leave their wedding to go play a cup final and then finish and come back. I think they gave me the most, you know, important three things which I needed as a young star. They gave me love, their time, you know, and support. And a lot of people, they grew up without that. They're missing that, you know. I mean, it's sad when you read such crazy stories that a 12-year-old is pregnant. You know, these young boys, they don't go to school. You know, they other than to drugs, or they just, you know, turn criminals. And I think another factor is that we no longer have after school activities. You know, when you come back from school, you have maybe four hours. It's a lot of time. You know, you can do so many things. But if we do have programs where these kids, when they, you know, leave school, either they do arts or they do, whether it's training, but something that will keep them off the streets. And it mustn't keep them off the streets just for the sake of it or for good publicity, but something that they will learn from it, and, you know, they'll grow from it, and they'll also, you know, help the young ones that are coming, the next generations. I think that's the only way we can change the society and the perception as well, you know, that it's fine.
my father is not there, then I can do wrong things. You know, we should try and eradicate that. You know, even if a child doesn't have a parent, but they must feel safe, they must feel important, you know, in the society. But it starts with you as an individual, you know, the self-discipline, the belief, and the dream. You don't stop dreaming. Whatever you face, you don't stop dreaming. You just you can't just wake up, you know, the next day you're successful. You know, it starts somewhere. You don't give up. Take inspiration from the next person.
Well, it's amazing to me that you guys have a unique ability here to get through to people because they look up to you in so many ways. But there's a lot of pressure attached to that. You know, you kind of, they expect you to be perfect.
Yeah.
And nobody is.
True.
I mean, like, we all make mistakes. We all fall down. We all do things that sometimes are not the best example. Mm. Do you feel extra pressure to have to be those perfect role models all the time?
Personally, for me, I not anymore. I used to feel pressure. I used to isolate myself and being scared to live my life because
and
I was scared.
That's no way to live.
Yeah, because I was scared to be judged. And then once I realized who I was and what I was, I started realizing that, you know, whatever I do, you know, whether I'm doing that or not, I'm still going to be judged anyway. So I might as well do the best that I can. And appreciate life itself and appreciate, you know, the gift that was given to me, which was football at the time. So also with my story as well, I didn't feel ashamed. I wrote a book about my story. I didn't feel ashamed because I wanted to share. And I want people to understand also that going through all those things, it's human. You know,
it's
what counts is how you come out of them, you know. And for me, that was the message that I was trying to prove, that, you know, even though you see me playing football like this, like I had to go through certain things to actually make it to where I am. And there's other people that they might not go through the same things, but they need to understand that sometimes, you know, achieving your dream might take a little bit longer, but once you have it, it's the most beautiful thing. For me, instead, I became a professional footballer when I was 25. In the PSL, and yet I started very, very young, and I had to move around also to get recognition.
Well, you moved around, and every time you started a new team, you have to bond with those guys.
Exactly.
You have to reforge relationships.
Exactly.
I mean, it's like going to a new school every time.
Exactly. So they need to understand that, you know, sometimes your dream might take a little bit longer. Just because somebody that is next to you, he achieved his a little bit earlier, doesn't mean yours is not going
to
come.
Yeah, and people, you know, you can't compare yourself to other people.
Yeah, but that's the challenge.
If you guys do in football, it's going to kill you because someone's always moving up and someone's always moving down.
Of course.
And you can't base your self-esteem on that stuff, right, Spiwe? How do you feel about the responsibility of being a role model? Tego said he used to be very worried about what people thought and being judged, and then that changed. How about you?
Yeah, I share the same sentiments with Tego. I mean, when you start, you know, being a professional player or being successful, you know, people love you, they look up to you, you know, you get so much attention, and sometimes you can be overwhelmed by that, you know, and people tend to forget that you are human, you make mistakes. And as well as an individual, you also put yourself under pressure and try to be perfect, you know, or features is not good. But as time goes on and then you become mature, then you realize that you're also human, you know, you make mistakes. And as much as you want to be perfect, you will not be perfect, you know. And the most important thing is to live, be yourself, and people, they follow that, you know. When you make a mistake, you acknowledge, you raise your hand, you take responsibility, and you move on. That's leadership. Because once you want to be perfect, then that's no longer you. You know, you're living a life that it's not you. So people should appreciate, should love you with your flaws.
Well, gentlemen, we love you with your flaws. The whole country loves you both. You continue to inspire us all. And I'm very glad that you could be part of this special day, because I think for these young men, this is going to be life-changing. For some of them, it might mean a little more or a little less, but to have you here gives it enormous weight and credibility. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is CliffCentral.com.